And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your Front Range morning news program here on Community Radio, KGNU. It's Friday, January 18th. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we have artist Stephen Frost of The Sewing Rebellion here in the studio to tell us about a sewing workshop taking place this Sunday that encourages participants to use hand embroidery and to focus on social action and community improvement in the process. Then, Colorado teens have the highest rate of e-cigarette use in the country, and lawmakers are proposing a bill that would update the Clean Indoor Air Act to ban vaporizers in public places, an action they believe will combat the youth vaping problem. We'll hear from a pulmonologist from Children's Hospital Colorado and one of the lawmakers sponsoring the bill coming up in the program. And the Women's March Denver 2019 starts tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. at Civic Center Park in downtown Denver. Coming up at 8:30 on Connections, four March leaders will talk about their goals and the journey to build a more welcoming and inclusive community. As always, your calls are welcome on Connections coming up at 8:30. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
Negotiations between Denver Public Schools and the Denver Classroom Teachers Association continues into its final day of bargaining today. The Denver teachers' contract expires midnight tonight, and if an agreement is not reached, the union will vote Saturday and Tuesday to decide if teachers will walk out. The Denver Post reports that Thursday, the teachers' union delivered their latest offer, which does not include one of the pay increases in their original salary schedule proposal. That proposal change cuts about $2.5 million off of their previously requested $30 million. As of now, this new offer leaves a gap of around $4.5 million between the district and the union's proposals. Both sides agree that they felt Thursday's bargaining session had tense moments, but there were also indications of positive progress. Governor Jared Polis yesterday issued an executive order directing the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment to pursue adoption of zero-emission vehicle standards. Maeve Conran has more.
The standards would require automakers to ensure that they make available enough electric vehicle models that approximately 9% of passenger vehicles sold by 2025 would be electric. The order also directs state officials to use money from the Volkswagen Settlement Fund that resulted from its Dieselgate emissions scandal to construct vehicle charging infrastructure around the state and to expand the use of zero-emission buses and trucks. There were several local legislators in attendance at the announcement on Thursday, including Boulder County Commissioner Elise Jones and Longmont Mayor Brian Bagley, who told Governor Polis that municipalities in northern Colorado are supportive of this move.
You've got a lot of support, Governor, from municipalities up north as you continue to advocate for renewables and specifically electric vehicles and transportation here throughout the state. There's a great, diverse group of stakeholders, not only here today, but we promise and commit to supporting you. So thank you.
Governor Polis said the electrification of vehicles would save consumers significant amounts of money. He cited a 2017 study that said the savings would be over $29 billion in reduced annual vehicle operating and fuel costs and $9.7 billion in health savings and reduced greenhouse gas emissions. In response to the executive order, the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association issued a statement saying that car buyers in the state are already free to buy electric vehicles if they so wish to do so, and they don't need the government telling them what vehicles they should buy. The Union of Concerned Scientists says that cars and trucks account for nearly one-fifth of all US emissions, emitting around 24 pounds of carbon dioxide and other global warming gases for every gallon of gas. For KGNU, I'm Maeve Conran.
The Colorado State Forest Service and U.S. Forest Service Rocky Mountain Region have released the 2018 Aerial Forest Health Survey for Colorado. The 2018 survey indicates bark beetle outbreaks have continued to expand in parts of Colorado. Almost 180,000 high-elevation Engelmann spruce were affected by spruce beetles in 2018. According to the report, since the year 2000, 1.8 million acres in Colorado have suffered from spruce beetle outbreaks, and around 40% of the spruce fir forests in the state have now been affected. The Forest Service says record warm temperatures and record low precipitation are making it possible for beetle populations to survive. In the midst of the federal government's shutdown, Boulder Science Institute, NCAR, received good news this week when funding came through from the National Science Foundation. The Daily Camera reports that this puts on hold emergency plans to make employees choose between a furlough or working for half pay on a voluntary basis, which was to have been implemented today. NCAR is not a federal laboratory, but the funding for it, much of it for the 2018 budget, comes from the National Science Foundation. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is also affected by the shutdown, except for a small number of employees deemed essential, such as forecasters at the National Weather Service. If employees have ended up working at half pay, they would have received the balance of their normal pay once the shutdown is resolved. In today's weather, high looks like around 40 degrees and snow likely between noon and 4 o'clock, possibly a half an inch of snow accumulation. Saturday and Sunday, mostly sunny over the week, Saturday a high of in the upper 40s and Sunday in the mid 50s. And then on Martin Luther King Day on Monday, there's rain possible in the morning and then snow showers in the afternoon. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
And the time is 8:11. You're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. This Sunday, the public is invited to join the Sewing Rebellion and artist Stephen Frost for a workshop that uses sewing as a means to activate citizens to take action in improving communities and initiating conversation around democracy and change. We have artist Stephen Frost here in the studio to tell us more. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So explain this event for us that's taking place on Sunday.
Well, this is an event that we actually launched in Berlin in September. And the event is designed, it's based on in 2006, right after the election, Frau Fieber, who is the founder of Sewing Rebellion, she set out a call for people to think about how they can engage with their community, how they can design programming around bringing together people through the practice of sewing. And so she launched a program called Mend America, which I was a part of in 2006 and 2017. And then with Frau Fieber and Janet Hollingsworth, who's one of the employees at Building 61 at the Boulder Public Library, we proposed this program for the next library conference in Berlin. And the program is called Mend the World. And what we do in this program is that we bring together people to do some embroidery and talk about democracy in their community. We create a couple different projects. One of them that's really interesting is basically we create these patches. And people embroider on these patches. It's an image of a globe, and they can add color to it or change it or put their slogan over it or whatever they want to do. And with this globe, then they put it in an envelope that we provide them, and they send it off to their representative with a note on the back of what they would like to see changed in their community, or maybe some positive comments or whatever, you know, the kind of things you write to your representative. And because it's an object that you're sending in the mail, it gets processed a little bit differently than, say, an email or a tweet or a letter. And so we found that from some of our participants that their opinions, their voices do get heard by these politicians because they send them a physical object in the mail. It's crazy.
And on the project, one thing that you had brought into the studio was a piece of fabric that has different patches on it that also have different places from the world. If you could speak about that a little bit. It's a really neat looking little piece of art you have there.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So we also, as part of this project, wanted to provide, that was, you know, the the patches are really something you could take home and work at any time, but we wanted something where people would stay in our space and work. And this is some of the things we'll be working on at the library this weekend. So we made patches of every single country in the world, which was kind of crazy. We made them on our laser cutter at the library on denim. So laser cutting denim, it's really fun. And people would come in and we had a card catalog where they could find their patches. We also had them up on the wall. And then they sit and embroider the patches of their country. And Berlin is an insanely international city. So when we were there, we made people's day. They would, you know, they'd be from some the smallest country in maybe sub-Saharan Africa, and they'd see their country represented on the wall, take it down, start bending their patch, and then having a conversation with all the other people that were there. It was quite an interesting experience. It was also interesting because we were instructing people how to embroider the best we could in multiple languages.
Reminds me of kind of the concept of sewing circles that mm-hmm. have been around for a long time, and that you know, always had a connotation, it seems like, throughout history, that there was discussion in mm-hmm. some capacity going on there. I'm curious about the response that you've gotten and a little bit about the age group that mm-hmm. you're seeing respond to this. I mean, I feel like we see a lot of knitting right now, but not as much embroidery. And so I'm curious what kind of age group you've seen there, and if you feel like the discussion around democracy and community building is something that really is resonating and bringing people into it in a way that it'd be different if it was just a sewing, you know, group.
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually do run a regular sewing group at the library every month. So we see quite a few people through that. So we have that experience of working with the public, and we're kind of trained in how to encourage them to have conversation. And yeah, it comes definitely from quilting bees, sewing circles, which is typically, you know, we stereotypically think of old ladies sitting around, right? But often it is an intergenerational experience, and people come in at different levels. I mean, I learned how to sew from my mom and from Frau Fiber and from other kind of mentors in my life. I didn't necessarily have formal training. And so with the embroidery project, we do get people at all levels. Embroidery is something that you can kind of be bad at and it still looks cool, right? You know, like, you know, the little hippie jackets in the 60s, right? There's something about adding new material over another material and making it your own, putting your signature on something. It's so similar to painting. It's kind of unbelievable. So people come in and we teach them, you know, some basic stitches, and they go crazy. And the stuff that people made was beautiful. And we had people who were old and people who were young instructing each other. It would be really funny when there was like a 12-year-old instructing like a 70-year-old, you know, kind of a little switch in what you expected in the embroidery. We did have one participant, and she was Danish, and she had been forced, she said, in primary school to learn how to do these traditional Danish embroidery styles, and she said she had not done it since like the 70s, and she was very excited to put them to use to make her Denmark patch for the flag.
And I'm curious a little bit about the discussions that come up related to mm-hmm. democracy and related to community building. Is that something that seems to happen within this group fairly organically, or is it something that takes a little bit of direction, I guess? How does that work at the actual events? Is it something that, you know, that conversation is spurred along by maybe some of the organizers that are part of there, or does this just happen on its own? It seems to be just part of the event that just happens within the people that are participating.
When you ask someone, like, what would you like to say to your representative, or in Germany, Bürgermeister, or whatever it is, right? So when you ask someone, you know, what do you want to say to your representative, that's really opens the door in many ways and gets people talking about what are their concerns in their community, what are the things that are happening politically at a broader scale that are making them nervous, or things that they'd like to see changed. And you'd be surprised, it doesn't actually take a lot of motivation to get people talking. And when you're working together, there's something that happens that just spawns conversations. People get to know each other. So it's a mix of like social kind of activity where people talk about their families, but then also sort of bring in these political topics. We do ask them, you know, to, while they're embroidering, think about the change they want in their community. And sometimes people sit silently, do their embroidery, and then they come up to us at the end and they tell us exactly what they want to see. And often it is, it's not always on a national level. Sometimes it is local change. They want to see things like better public transportation. They want to see services for senior citizens or better schools. But then often it is these global issues that we can all kind of share. Things about, you know, are the impact of the United States on other countries is something that we heard a lot about. And I hear a lot about that here in Boulder too, thinking internationally, how do we influence other countries and how can we spread democracy with in the way that we believe democracy should be spread. There's a lot of versions of what that means.
So tell our listeners where they can find out more and get involved.
Absolutely. So we meet every month. The Sewing Rebellion meets every month at the Boulder Public Library, typically on the first Sunday of the month. And you can go on the Boulder Public Library's Makerspace calendar and sign up for information. This Sunday's event takes place from 2 to 5:30 right in the lobby of the Canyon Gallery in the Public Library. It's totally free. All the materials are provided, instructions provided, embroidery floss is provided, and we'll be having a great time. We also do many events throughout the year, and you can find those also on my website, which is stephenfrost.com.
And that was artist Stephen Frost speaking to us about the Sewing Rebellion workshop taking place this Sunday. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for having me.
And you are listening to KGNU. The time is 8:20. Colorado health leaders are announcing the introduction of a bipartisan bill to modernize the Clean Indoor Air Act. The bill would prohibit the use of electronic smoking devices, known as e-cigarettes, in public spaces and workplaces. In a few moments, we'll hear comments from a pulmonologist who is and also a representative who is sponsoring the bill. That representative is Representative Daphna Michelson-Janay. And she says a major part of the goal of the bill is to address youth e-cigarettes, the epidemic that the Surgeon General has referenced in the country. And it's a big issue here in Colorado, more so than anywhere else.
Kids are seeing vaping and e-cigarettes used in public spaces on a regular basis. And Colorado is number one in teen use of e-cigarettes and vaping, which is mind-boggling. We know that the amount of nicotine in every pod is equivalent to three packs of cigarettes. And some of our kids will go through three pods a day. And the impact of addiction is just the same as that of nicotine addiction of any other sort. And the young body is particularly susceptible to addiction. So I feel very strongly that we have to do something. And one of the things that we can do is eliminate it from public spaces so that our kids aren't seeing it and feeling that normative motion that happens when you see an adult doing an activity in a public space that is permitted. We know our youth have learned that cigarette smoking causes negative effects to those around the cigarette smoker as well as to the smoker themselves because we've taken it out of enclosed spaces. And now they see us allowing vaping and e-cigarette use in enclosed spaces and it registers in their mind that it must be okay. This is one way that we can go about showing our youth that it's not okay and it's a choice that we would hope that they wouldn't make when they become of age. First of all, to be able to legally purchase the vaping and e-cigarettes, but especially now as their young and developing and growing bodies need not to be addicted to a source like nicotine.
I imagine there'll be many adults that use e-cigarettes and vape that would be upset if this were to pass. And some might be of the opinion that there's insufficient evidence to show that the secondhand vapor is bad for people or that this bill is intended to discourage young people from using e-cigarettes, but in doing so, is that limiting the freedoms of adults who would like to use a device they legally can use, and they might be of the opinion doesn't really harm anyone else in any significant way?
I think it's always hard when restrictions are put into place, and I don't do this lightly, and I don't want to take away somebody's liberties to be able to smoke. But we do know that the chemicals that are released into the air and that the smell, for example, which disrupts an experience, say, at a restaurant, is something that is harming other people around you. And while you make the choice to utilize an e-cigarette or a vaping device, and you have absolute right to do that, we also have right to have clean air to breathe inside our buildings.
A lot of people who use vaporizers will attest that there really is no danger as far as the secondhand vapor produced, that they're not harming anyone. Dr. Amanda Messenger is a pediatric pulmonologist at Children's Hospital Colorado, and she explained what they know at this point about the effects of e-cigarette and vaporizer use in the public and around other people.
What we know about the off-gassed vapors or the exhaled vapors from e-cigarettes is that they do contain high amounts of different chemicals that are the things that give the vape liquid flavor and also are designed to be a very efficient delivery system for the nicotine drug substances that people are using these devices for. And so as for the chemicals that we know are in some of these devices and in some of these liquids, things like lead, heavy metals like lead, arsenic, as well as other chemicals, long-term exposed to the lungs, we know cause damage. And we're in the process of learning how to study these devices and track that damage long-term. But the chemicals that we know damage lungs are in these devices, and there's less of them than in regular cigarettes. But e-cigarettes may be a little bit safer, but overall we know that the risk for addiction is extremely high with these devices, as well as potentially long-term harmful physical side effects that we can't, yet predict because of the chemicals.
And we know at this point that teens are impacted on a physical level by using e-cigarettes differently than adults. If you could speak to some of the effects of e-cigarette use on teens and young people specifically.
So we know that teen brains, particularly adolescent brains, are far more susceptible to addiction and addictive behaviors than fully developed adult brains. And so the impact of exposing kids in a fairly, normalized way to high doses of nicotine and other drugs of abuse in this crucial period of their brain development, can set them up for a lifetime of addiction and change the way their brains process information and how their bodies process sort of basic emotions and perceptions of the world. One of the things that's most concerning to me, particularly about the teen vaping epidemic, is that many teens really think that vaping is safe and harmless, and they may not even realize that many of these devices have these high doses of addicting drugs in them, like nicotine. And so we really don't know how to treat nicotine addiction well in children or teens. And because of the vaping epidemic, we're seeing children as young as 11-year-olds that are very, very addicted to nicotine. And so the options for how to get these kids off these drugs are pretty limited because a lot of the aids that we have to do that are not approved for children. So it's really not a safe alternative, especially if you're talking about a kid who's never smoked a regular cigarette in their life because they weren't even smoking before using these vaping devices and now are sort of setting themselves up for a lifetime of health consequences. I think it's really important that we as advocates call on our government and Governor Polis and our state leadership to support this bipartisan health bill to address the Clean Indoor Air Act and really address the epidemic of e-cigarette use around teens. We need to reduce secondhand exposure to nicotine and other chemicals and protect everyone's right to breathe smoke-free air.
And in that story, we heard from Representative Daphna Michelson-Janay and Dr. Amanda Messenger. She's a pediatric pulmonologist at Children's Hospital, Colorado.
On Thursday, January 31st, KGNU Community Radio and EcoCycle will host a community conversation on the impact of plastic waste in our environment. Join us for a panel discussion with representatives from EcoCycle, the Inland Ocean Coalition, and local business and sustainability leaders on the reality of plastic waste, its impact on the environment, especially its impact on water systems. We'll look at the challenges in recycling different plastics, and we'll discuss what individuals and businesses can do to reduce plastic waste. That's a community conversation on plastic at the Longmont Museum's Stewart Auditorium, Thursday, January 31st at 6:30 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. More information at kgnu.org.
And that does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hanalee Myers. Expect possible snow today with a high around 40 degrees. Tonight, a low somewhere around 23. We do see temperatures warming back up to the low 50s over the weekend before we see another chance for snow on Monday. That's Martin Luther King Jr. Day.